FNR, Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone, streaming 24-7, this is FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego. This is Culture Cafe, the only breakfast show dedicated to football in Australia. It is indeed a radio revolution here at FNR Football Nation Radio. We are your voice of football, so join the conversation on any of our live shows today, including Culture Cafe, and you get a chance to win, as a lot of our callers and SMSs have done throughout the week, a traditional premium-packed panettone from our great friends there at Ital. Just give us a call anytime on our live shows today. 9944 9999 9999 9999 03 in front of that if you're outside Victoria, plus 613 if you're overseas. Our SMS number for your thoughts and comments is 0428 933 345. That's 0428 933 345. It is a huge, huge hour in the cafe this morning. Of course, this week it was announced that Ian Robson, CEO of Melbourne Victory, would be stepping down by the end of the year. And we have interim CEO Richard Wilson to chat about that, plus all things Melbourne Victory today on the cafe. We catch up with Western Sydney Wanderers star goalkeeper in the W League, Jada Wyman, a terrific young talent there, ahead of the big Sydney Derby that's coming up this weekend on Saturday. Of course, it's a doubleheader with the W League before the A-League. Terrific showpiece of football there in Sydney on Saturday. In Club Corner, we catch up with Angelo Colangelo, the club chairman of Croydon Kings in Adelaide. In Power and the Passion, we also chat with Amanda Van Eldick, from a charity called Kit Aid Australia. So there's plenty to get through this morning here on Culture Cafe, so let's get into it.
FNR Football Nation Radio.
Of course, we will start off this morning. I caught up with Jada Wyman, a young goalkeeper there for Western Sydney Wanderers, again playing in the W League, curtain raiser before the A League this Saturday night. Of course, a doubleheader in the Sydney Derby, Western Sydney Wanderers versus Sydney FC. She's a delightful young woman who is a great young goalkeeper, and I had a great chat with her yesterday. Jada, thanks for joining us today. The season so far, you've had one win from four, but you've been competitive in all the games so far. What's your view on how the team's going so far this season?
I think every team has had their ups and downs. Even the best teams like Perth Glory or Melbourne City have had losses. In the W League, you can expect anything, so yeah.
And of course, Richard Byrne, your coach, from all reports, he put you through a pretty stringent pre-season this year, and apparently all the squad was involved in that pre-season. How's that helped you this year to be probably that little bit more competitive on the field as a team?
I think it's really gelled us together, the hard pre-season. I wasn't actually a part of it. I was away at the time for pre-season. Showing from what pre-season we had and then going into the season, I think it's really pushed us to be better.
So tell us about your background, Jada. Obviously, you're a Wagga girl and football's one of the sports you play in Wagga. How did you get started playing football and especially becoming a goalkeeper?
I grew up in Wagga. I played AFL, softball, mostly all the sports in Wagga, really. I just loved playing sport. And then probably my biggest passion was AFL at the time, but then you could only play to under 12.
Yep.
My pop had suggested that I try another sport, and football was it.
Did you still, now with the AFLW, do you still harbour a little bit of a temptation maybe to dabble in AFL, given that a lot of the girls who play in the W League actually AFL at the same time?
I have a strong interest in watching it, but I kind of fell in love with football, so... I would never leave the sport, really.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, as Sam Kerr once said, you know, you're playing Olympics, you're playing World Cups, you travel the world, and you know, you get a lot more opportunities as far as the global part of sport when you're playing the world game, that's for sure. How about goalkeeping? How did you get into goalkeeping?
So when I first took up football, I just played anywhere really, and then I tried for the Wagga Rep team, and they had no goalkeepers. So I was like, sure, I'll do it. Wasn't a big fan of running or anything. I just kind of jumped into goalkeeping and played one tournament there and was told I wasn't allowed to leave the position. So.
What did you learn about goalkeeping? Because people watch it when they've never done it before and they think, oh, you just got to catch the ball with your two hands. It's probably pretty easy. But what other things are involved in being a really good goalkeeper?
You need to be explosive at times, I guess. You need to have a great understanding of the game, which I'm still developing. But I think, mostly explosiveness and leadership and communication. I think they're probably the biggest parts of being a top goalkeeper.
And do you think being, the hand-eye coordination needed in other sports like netball and football, all those games you played when you were younger, do you think that sort of helped you become the elite goalkeeper you are at the moment?
Yeah, for sure. For AFL, I love speckies and I love doing that in games. So, I think a lot of my sports that I played in the past have emerged into kind of goalkeeping. I wouldn't say like a field player is a lot like other sports, but I would say that goalkeeping comes in to many categories of other sports. So, yeah.
Well, you've played for the Australian women's team in the under-17s and some of the underage teams. So obviously you've shown a fair bit of the ability to be an elite goalkeeper at a very, very young age. How did you get ID'd in Wagga and what have you done to make sure that you're competing and getting the best possible coaching? I believe that you did travel to Sydney almost three or four times a week to get that sort of exposure. Is that the sort of thing that you had to do, that sacrifice you had to make to get the exposure with the good goalkeeping?
Yeah, well, I started off in Wagga and I made Riverina teams and then Football New South to New South Wales country teams, and I was scouted at nationals by the goalkeeping coach at the moment, Paul Jones.
Yep.
And the head coach at the time was Tom Samani, and they suggested that I travel to Canberra to train with Paul Jones. And I was travelling to Canberra for about a year and also travelling up to Sydney to have better quality games, and ended up moving to Canberra for Paul Jones Goalkeeping Academy. And then after a year there, I moved to Sydney. That was probably my pathway of getting into better quality football. And Paul Jones helped me get trials in to teams and stuff like that, and yeah, he probably helped me the most. And then getting into Wanderers, I've had Davide Del Giovanni. He's been great. I've been working with him for the past 4 years now. Top goalkeeping coaches, probably the best two I would say in the country for women's football. So
who do you have as a hero or as a female role model in the game? Do you look at the male goalkeepers overseas in the EPL or some of the big leagues, or do you just look at someone like Lydia Williams or Eliza Campbell, Mackenzie Arnold, these sort of goalkeepers to really model your game on?
Lydia is probably the one I look at the most. I've looked up to her since I was 9 years old, and seeing what she's doing at the moment, she's played a big part in the games that they've won against top quality teams in the world. She's been a big part of that, and I'd have to say her. She's my hero inspiration.
How about a lot of the girls actually play football 12 months a year now, and they travel to the US or play in Europe. What's your ambition in that area?
Hopefully one day I can do that. I'm watching a lot of the players from the Matildas going overseas, the better quality, and it's showing when they come back to play in the Matildas squad. It's something I would like to do at some point. I've just finished my HSC, so it was just a bit of a chill-out time at the moment and concentrate on W League. So, yeah, hopefully one day I get to do that.
You must be excited because you're only a youngster and, like you said, you just finished your Year 12 and the Matildas are doing what they're doing on the world stage. And a lot of people are saying in the next, you know, couple of rotations they might win a World Cup or, you know, obviously they've got the Asian Cup next year and then the Olympics coming up. You've got a really fantastic opportunity to really step up. Even though there's a bit of competition around you, you must be really thrilled with what the Matildas are doing at the moment. That must be a real inspiration to you to get better.
Yeah, for sure. Having them in the W League after doing international commitments, it really lifts the game, I think. And if I want to be in the Matildas, I need to be better than one of the goalkeepers in there. So it really does lift my game. It pushes me to want to be better. And I'm assuming for the rest of the players, it always pushes them as well. And it's not just growing the women's game, it's growing the quality of football in Australia for women. So they've got big expectations, so a lot of people need to rise for that.
They say that a really great goalkeeper in modern times has to not only be good with their hands and be a good shot stopper and a good above their head catching those high balls, but you've got to actually be very good with ball at feet. Are you that sort of goalkeeper?
I would like to think I'm okay with my feet. I have to say I'm probably a bit crazy sometimes, a bit of a Manuel Neuer. I like to have the ball at my feet a lot and take on strikers, which is probably not the best thing sometimes. But I've been working a lot with Craig Foster at Football New South Wales and Gary Van Egmond, as that they want me to play a lot more higher and dribble with the ball at my feet. So it's different to what I'm used to, but I think it's fitting in well with the Wanderers this year as they develop into a different kind of football as well.
Maybe all that running you were trying to avoid when you were younger, that's coming back to haunt you a little bit.
I would say so. I have dreaded the moment that would come back.
Well, it's a big weekend for you guys. Of course, it's a Sydney derby, not only for the men, but also for the women. It's a double header. You must be really excited. A Sydney team you're up against that's actually regained a bit of form over the last couple of weeks. You guys are tough to beat, though. How do you see yourselves getting over Sydney this week?
I think if we just put in the effort, we've got great players in our team. It's a completely different squad to what it was last year. And it's a double derby. The passion of that game always brings a little bit more to the game. So I think playing our home game, home field as well, should really bring it home for us, hopefully.
Good on you, Jada. And I really hope that you don't have a lot to do, but when you do have something to do, you do it with your feet, you dribble up the field, and you create a few headlines for us.
I don't know if my coach would be too pleased about that, but sure.
Good stuff, mate. Good luck for this weekend.
No worries. Thank you very much.
That was Jada Wyman, young Western Sydney Wanderers W League goalkeeper, ahead of the big derbies in Sydney this Saturday night. Of course, it's the W League Western Sydney Wanderers versus Sydney FC derby as a curtain raiser to the A League game on Saturday night. Huge game in Sydney. It's going to be a sellout again, and it's great that the women can get around and play their fantastic brand of football. I've really got into the W League this season, and Jada Wyman, you know, the more I speak to these young girls coming through, the more impressed I am, not only with their ability on the field to play football at a really, really high level, but also their temperament and their personality. I think they're all going to be fantastic going forward. This is a real generation of young girls playing the game, and hopefully win us a World Cup or Asian Cup next year or an Olympic gold medal coming up very, very soon. We're really proud of what they're doing, and I love speaking about them all the time. Before we go to a break, of course, it's Champions League morning and big results happening, and of course, it's the last game of the group stage, and some teams really need to get some points on the board to qualify for the sudden death knockout stages next. And Porto in Portugal are 2-0 up against Monaco at the moment. Liverpool are 3-0 up against Spartak Moscow. This is after 34 minutes, by the way. Coutinho's firing for Liverpool at the moment. He's got two goals, one in the fourth minute, a penalty, and also in the 15th minute. And Firmino, who's on fire too, in the 18th minute. Liverpool are scoring goals for fun at the moment. They're doing so both in the EPL and also in the Champions League. Maribor is 1-0 up against Sevilla at the moment. Shakhtar Donetsk, 2-0 up against Manchester City, incredibly, and they actually do need to get the points here to make sure that they've got a chance to go to the next stage, especially with Napoli breathing down their neck. Bernard and Ismaili scored in the 26th and the 32nd minute there for Shakhtar Donetsk. That's a shock after 35 minutes. Let's see if Manchester City, after being challenged probably for the first time this season, whether they are good enough to come back from this. Leipzig 1-0 down at home to Besiktas, who's having a fantastic Champions League run at the moment. Tottenham 1-0 up against Apoel, and their Llorente scoring in the 20th minute there. Of course, showing good form in the Champions League, not so good form in the EPL at the moment. Real Madrid 2-0 up against Dortmund. Mayoral scoring in the 8th minute, and Cristiano Ronaldo on the board there in the 12th minute. And of course, Feyenoord and Napoli 1-1. Jorgensen scoring for Feyenoord in the 33rd, and Zielinski scoring in the 2nd minute for Napoli. So some big results there, and some teams will be worried right to the last minute to see whether they're going to get to the next stage, knockout stage. We'll bring you the scores throughout the morning on Calcio Cafe and also the journos to give you the up-to-date results as they happen here on the Champions League on FNR Football Nation Radio. Let's go to a break, and after the break, we're going to catch up in the Power and the Passion segment with Amanda Van Eldik. She's from Kit Aid Australia, doing wonderful work collecting kits and sending them to places all around the world where people in underprivileged areas and communities in America and Africa are receiving these kits, and she'll be talking all about that here on Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24-7, this is FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up in the cafe very, very soon, it's Richard Wilson, interim CEO there at Melbourne Victory. And, of course, we've got Angelo Colangelo from Croydon Kings in Adelaide. But first, let's shoot over to the offices of Kit Aid Australia and talk to Amanda Van Eldink with her wonderful work there with this organisation. Good morning to you, Amanda.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really, really well. Thanks for joining us this morning. Tell us about Kit Aid Australia. How did it start and how many years has it been going for?
Yeah, so we started in 2015, and it came about because my friend Kayla Gaffer and I decided that we wanted to do something good. And Kayla is a massive, massive football fan. She plays for a local club in Canberra. And I'm just a Socceroos fan, and so we thought something around sport would be great. And there was actually a bit of research done, and we found Kit Aid in the UK, and they sort of became our model for the kind of work that we wanted to do.
So I know you're a non-for-profit organisation. What sort of work do you do, which communities do you help?
Yes, yeah, so the basis is that we collect unused or slightly used kit from soccer clubs. So everything from boots and socks and jerseys, and we send it over to various communities overseas. The most recent lot of stuff that we've sent has gone to the Congo, to a local organization there that uses football as an outreach program to re-engage kids in education programs. So there are a lot of really great organizations around the world that are using sport and football to help kids with various things, but mainly education.
Amanda, I'd imagine in a place like Australia where kids are, you know, buying a new pair of boots every year, some have two or three pairs of boots, the colourful boots they get these days and the different kits, that this could get a pretty big operation. Do you have many people in Australia working on this?
So it is just Kayla and I that work on it together. And we have a lovely team of volunteers that help when we need to sort through the very generous donations that we receive. Like you said, there is a lot of stuff out there that people want to donate, which is great.
And of course, when it comes to these sort of programs, when you get started, you're full of goodwill and you think it's a great idea and everything's going well. But when you get into it, you know there's a number of challenges and it's a lot of work. What are the challenges you faced in starting this and also progressing with this over time?
Yeah, I guess because it's kind of a two-sided program in that we receive the donations and then we provide all of the kit to the deserving charities that we work with. The biggest challenge we faced is the logistics of it. It's very expensive to find storage. It's very expensive to ship to these organizations. And so the logistics of it and the finance side of it is probably the biggest challenge that we have.
So how do you get it funded? I'd imagine that, like you said, that it's one thing doing good in this area and helping a lot of these underprivileged communities around the world, but you need to fund this thing.
Yeah, so I guess initially a lot of it came from Kayla and myself. We were just paying for the storage from our own bank accounts. We've received a very generous donation from a club up in the Central Coast last year, and that helped us to ship a couple of things. But yeah, it's generally been just from our own pockets so far. So yeah, it's been a challenge, but it's always worth it when you get to see the pictures of the kids in the uniforms and they're so happy. So, it makes it worth it.
I was going to ask you about that, Amanda. Of course, when it gets hard like that and you're just wondering, you've got a bit of a mountain to climb, what are the success stories that keep you going?
Yeah, definitely the photos. So part of the agreement that we have with the charities that we send to is that they provide us photos of who they've donated to show that the kit has actually been distributed. And when they send us the photos and the videos, it's been really, really lovely to see. It makes it all worth it.
And you talk about the partners you need to really get this going in an efficient sort of way. Who are some of the partners you work with around the world?
So at the moment, it's very sort of local charities. One of them in Congo is called Education Empowerment in Congo. And there's another organization called GTEC Football Club. We've had a few church groups who go and do football camps in places like the Philippines and Vietnam. So we've just donated a lot of kit to them, and the girls have just gone on their trip, so hoping to get some photos back from them as well. So it's very much small, local charity organisations that we're partnering with at the moment, just because they have people here in Australia that can go back and forth and really keep the cost of the logistics down.
Well, Amanda, obviously it's a fantastic, initiative that you've taken on here. Kit Aid Australia is the name of the initiative. You need support, and here's your chance. So how do the people out there who are resonating with your story, how can they support you by way of money or other resource?
Yeah, so obviously it would be great if there was people that wanted to sort of partner with us or sponsor us so that we could continue to do the work. All the generous people that were wanting to help out, they can contact us on our Facebook page, which is Kit Aid Australia, we can go from there.
Good on you, Amanda. Well, look, FNR's right behind you, so anytime you need any promotion or any messages out there to let people know how things are going, let us know. But congratulations on what you're doing, and keep up the great work, mate.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No worries. That's Amanda Van Eldink, the organiser, one of the founders of Kit Aid Australia, international non-profit organisation that collects new and used kits and distributes it and donates it to underprivileged communities in South America and Africa. Fantastic initiative. Just in the Champions League, approaching half-time now. Most games are at half-time. Porto 3-0 up, Liverpool 3-0 up. Of course, Porto's playing playing Monaco. Liverpool are 3-0 up against Spartak Moscow. Maribor is 1-0 up against Sevilla. Shakhtar Donetsk still 2-0 up against Manchester City. That's a real boil over that one there is. Leipzig 1-0 down against Besiktas at the moment. Tottenham are 2-0 up at home against Apoel Nicosia. Real Madrid are 2-1 up against Dortmund. Dortmund getting one late in that half. And Feyenoord and Napoli are 1-1 at halftime. We'll continue to bring those results to you as they progress through the morning on Calcio Cafe and also the journos. But next up here on Calcio Cafe, we have Richard Wilson, interim CEO there at Melbourne Victory, joining us. So stay tuned.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24-7. This is FNR Football Nation Radio. Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up very, very soon, live from Adelaide, we have Angelo Colangelo, club chairman of the Croydon Kings in our club corner. But first, let's go to the offices of Melbourne Victory and speak to interim CEO there at the moment, Richard Wilson. Good morning to you, Richard.
Morning, Carl.
Yes. Yeah, really well, mate. It's great having a chat to you this morning. Just let's get on to the issue that occurred this week. After 4 years, Ian Robson announced this week that he would be stepping down as CEO of Melbourne Victory. Robbo being such a strident, upfront and public CEO, was that a surprise to you and the club that he was moving on?
I don't think anything surprises anyone these days in sport, Carlos, and business. Business for that matter, with people's careers, and I think Robbo obviously found a role at Rowing Australia that he thought was really suitable for him at this time of his career, and look, we wish him the best. He's had 4 really good years at Melbourne Victory, and I think people's careers these days take turns for. As opportunities arise, and you're never surprised at anything really, and CEOs generally, you know, 4 or 5 years is a fair run for any CEO in business, and you sort of have a look at sort of reevaluate where you are in your time of your life, your family, and all sorts of things can dictate a decision. So also was a surprise, sure, but we wish you the well, and the Olympic movement awaits.
Of course, and Robbo's had an extensive experience across a number of high-profile sports, one including the AFL too, and he was much respected in that sport. How did the club improve during his reign, and what legacy do you think he's leaving behind?
Well, I think you're right. His profile and what came with that was bringing our brand and our day-to-day activities to the fore. You know, obviously, he had a segment with Kevin Bartlett on SEN and his profile around the corporate and government world is strong and a great advocate for the club and what the club has been trying to do, which is particularly in our academy space and our commercial and our business worlds as well. And he's a sports fan, so he's pretty solid on understanding the football and the detail around the players and the football department as well. So I think internally he's brought some brought a whole lot of professionalism at a high elite level that is commensurate to what he's done over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years really, in various sports, and so I think that's probably where his legacy sits with us. We've grown over the last 4 years in our revenues, and obviously we won the championship in 2015, I think it was, there. So, you know, there's a strong legacy that Ian's left us.
You, of course, have lived every minute and every kick and every tackle of the last 12 years of the A-League. Richard, you've been there since day one. By way of growth, how would you describe the last 4 years? You sort of touched on it with the increase in income, but by way of phases, you talked about CEOs really being 4 or 5 year phases until, you know, they move on and you get someone else new. Can you describe the last 4 years of growth in the A-League and Melbourne Victory in particular, and what you expect in the next 4 years?
Well, look, well, very challenging for the next 4 years, particularly given what's happening right now at the governance level and the independence level of the A-League. Look, the last 4 years we've grown in pretty much most of the areas of the business of Melbourne Victory. Our social media platforms have continued to grow, connection out to the fans, our community programs through Club Victory, the clubs and the schools and community programs that we run have really gone to the fore, and you know, we've received some significant government funding around all of that to help drive community engagement, you know, just not at the football level either, you know, it's at community levels as well, and behaviours and dealing with various groups throughout Melbourne and Victoria. Our memberships, you know, has gone up. So the club itself has grown and is maturing. And obviously, we want it to continue to grow and impact in a highly competitive, you know, world of sport in Victoria and Melbourne with other clubs and the AFL in particular. For the next 4 years, this period of time with FIFA, the FFA, where the A-League clubs are at, in terms of how we see the best way forward for the A-League, I think the numbers this year have been disappointing. You know, you can't hide from that. It does look like the league at the minute is in a hiatus situation, and you know, there are some big decisions. It always starts at the top, Carlos, what comes out of FIFA and how the FFA and the stakeholders respond and move forward is critical to where the professional game land sees itself over the next 4 years.
When we unravel the turmoil and when we get out of this period, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know how long it's going to be before this political mess gets sorted, but I think we'll find that the clubs will have a little bit more independence. It might be a lot of independence, but a little bit more. I think that's what you guys have been striving for. Does the type of CEO have to match that next phase, where if you're given more independence, if the A-League becomes an independent league, do you need a certain type of CEO to really grab that by the scruff of the neck and go with that?
At an independent A-League level or a Melbourne Victory level?
Oh, both. If you're given an independent A-League, I think it affects both, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, definitely. And the clubs, you know, we've worked through a plan. I think it's 9. We've got a 300-page document that we're close to finalising about a plan for an independent A-League and what all that would mean through the stakeholders and down the ranks, and more importantly, what it would mean for the professional league. We would definitely need a CEO who would be able to deliver that plan and an independent A-League and a management structure and to really take what we believe the A-League to the next phase of its evolution. And I think that's part of the issue around where it sits today for the clubs is it needed what started with Frank Lowy and, 12 years ago, but times move on and the game's changed and our view is that the A-League and the professional game needs to change to go forward, to grow, and to evolve, and so yeah, it's a very important role, that CEO role for the independent league and Melbourne Victory for any club. The CEO, you know, your chairman, your CEO, your coach in terms of football parlance are the three key stakeholders of your club. So a role, you know, for us to get the next and the right CEO going forward for Melbourne Victory is a critical. We're in a critical phase. We are caught up in what's going on. Every club's caught up what's going on at the minute. So we've got to make sure that we have the right person who can. And as a club, we've got to understand, you know, where we're at today, what our vision is going forward, and how we find the right person that can deliver what the board wants and what our fans want, and and obviously deliver results on the field as well.
Now, Richard, you are a shareholder, investor, board member, various times interim CEO. I'm surprised that you haven't coached the team yet and you're not the boot starter. You've done so much at that club. What's the potential of Melbourne Victory? I look at it as, your membership numbers are around 27,000 or something like that. I just see this as a 40,000-member club. I see this as a club that's that will rival the mid-range AFL clubs in Victoria. I think that your footprint here is so strong. Does it frustrate you that you guys aren't at that level yet, given that there's so much potential?
Look, we obviously... I remember actually when I was in the chair there around 2012-13, I think one of them said to Matt Winley at one time, we should be a 50,000-member club. And I think that... The evolution, the transition, what we would call the continuum of getting kids and families to play the game, then come watch games at the A-League, choose a club, and then become a member, hasn't been as quick as what we all would have liked. For whatever reason, that might be. So obviously we do see it, particularly with the numbers of participating kids playing football. There is a real opportunity to take a footprint. But it just goes back to the heart of everything, that if you've got to have all your stars aligned in sport. Australia is a highly competitive sporting beast. And if you don't have everything lined up and the right decisions being made from the top all the way through, your media partners, your marquee players, what you're delivering on the ground, what's around match day, then other sports will take their opportunity, and we've just got to get all of these structural things right to provide a really firm foundation. Our relationship with state federations and clubs, all dripping down into the grassroots. The professional game is what drives any code in any country, it's really important that the A-League is allowed to flourish, allowed to grow, because as we've seen in the last 12 years, the growth in football, when it was, as was described by Stephen Lowy, a basket case, what's happened in football because of the A-League and the investment of the owners in particular is that it's given a pathway and a vision for kids to play football and see a professional game at a level never seen before in the country. And that's what we've got to capitalise on. So you're right, we want 50,000 members, and we've got a stadium that can cater for 50,000 members. And we want to play the game, and it's the world game, and that's why we invested in it, that's why we're a part of it, that's why we spent so much time with it. It's been a great journey along the way, and our fans have enjoyed fantastic success. And our members have stuck with us, and we're not going anywhere. But it's a hard road. It's competitive, and getting the right CEO at Melbourne Victory, getting the right CEO, if we can get an independent A-League and the right management team around that to drive it, are critical factors for the game.
And you guys are the barometer for me. I think you and Western Sydney Wanderers, but you've been at it a lot longer than them. And if you guys can get it right and be the template for all the other clubs, I think it's ready to be turbocharged, really, the A-League. One last one before I let you go, mate. What I've really loved this year, the introduction of the double headers, and we've got another one this Friday night, of course, at Etihad between you in Adelaide. You've got your youth team playing before the seniors, and I know that around the offices here at FNR there's a few of our youth team experts, youth league experts, who just love the idea of the kiddies playing before the main guys. Is there a chance that we're going to get more of this? Because I just think watching the next a lot of youth coming through is a real interest to a lot of your supporters.
Look, I think there's a little bit of logistics around with venues and opening and things like that, but crowds and so there's a bit of a logistical issue around that. But there's no doubt we would want games. We've had the women's league play some games. If they haven't played already, they will be. Friday night's another example of that. So we were like, whether you call them curtain raisers or whatever we call them. I think for the players, for the younger players, and for the girls to be able to play on a main stadium in those environments is part of the whole maturing and their experience and the desire to want to play football at the highest level on the best stadiums and on the best pitches. So we'd like to do it every week. Logistically, it's difficult, but that's certainly why these games are being played, so that we can get as many as we can in a season. These two seasons, the Women's League season and the Youth League seasons, are short seasons. So it comes a little bit tight. The fans just need to understand the curators and the stadium owners are very precious about their grass. Mm. And so it sometimes becomes a bit difficult with the wear and tear and the other codes that play or other events that are on in these stadiums. So it becomes a bit tricky sometimes.
Just before I let you go, Richard, where are you at with the academy? I know Ian Robson was very disappointed with the fact that funding from government didn't come through to set up that academy. I think they were talking about it with VU in the Footscray area here in Melbourne. Where are you at with that? Because I think if Victory get that right, suddenly that is a fantastic template for the rest of the clubs too.
Yeah, and look... Look, we're about to resubmit for that project this week. I think our document will be finished to be lodged into the government. We've been working closely with Sport and Rec and other government departments to put a very enhanced community-based academy program to them for funding. It's a substantial amount of money that we're looking to achieve, but I think both from a football side into the academy that you talk about and the facility that will also support community programs and outreach is a fantastic model. And I think that hopefully this time, of course, it's an election year and they have got a lot of money from the sale of the ports, so we're hopeful that we'll get it through this time around, which obviously will be somewhere between May and March and April through the budget cycle, so forth. So it's a really important piece of our club that we haven't achieved as yet. It's fundamental for any sporting organisation. The AFL clubs have been doing it, and you see it in football around the world. They've all got academies, all the big clubs and the clubs have got academies and junior talent pathway programs. So we're really bullish about getting something done very, very quickly.
Good on you, Richard. Look, mate, keep up the great work. Victory, I know there's a lot of potential there to reach, a lot of work to be done, but you guys are on the path, mate. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Carlos. Thanks for your support.
Good on you, mate. That's Richard Wilson, interim CEO, after the announcement that Ian Robson will be moving on from Melbourne Victory in the near future as CEO. They'll be looking for a new one, and hopefully it'll be a new environment, an independent A-League environment that they'll be working in when they get the new CEO. Let's shoot over to Adelaide now and speak to Angelo Colangelo, the club chairman of Croydon Kings. Of course, it's Calcio Cafe Club Corner. Good morning to you there, Angelo.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for joining us this morning, mate. So I know it's very early there in Adelaide, but I know you probably get up really early in the morning to talk about Croydon Kings at every opportunity. You are the club chairman of Croydon Kings Football Club there in Adelaide. Tell us about the club. How many players and teams do you have, and what competition do you play in?
We play in the NPL in South Australia, which is our Premier League. We currently have... Well, for next year, 13 junior teams from under 12s to 17s. We have six or five mini route teams and the three senior teams.
Of course, you came, I think you ended up on top of the NPL ladder last season, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, because that's obviously a very strong competition right throughout Australia. Your roots of the club, though, and this really interests me, Polonia Adelaide, a club that was started off in the 50s and bred some really terrific players. Johnny Cosmina was one in particular. Do you have that quality of play coming through the ranks these days?
We believe we have a strong junior structure. So we've developed some players. Rocky Visconti's back with us, and he started his time at Croydon. But just from Johnny Cosmina and the Cosmina family are a big part of Croydon Kings or Polania back then. So the heritage or the history of the club being Polish 65 years ago is important, and we still keep that running through the club. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of Polish players left at the club, but it's something we're working hard on. But as far as our juniors playing our senior competition, we do promote from within. Our team that won it this year, 11 players played some junior football at the club and then played seniors. So we do promote from within.
That's fantastic there, Angelo, because I think that's the strength of the NPL clubs, if it's run properly, getting those kids coming through, training them really well with fantastic coaching, and then so they're ready. So you're not just giving any kids a go. The kids will be well prepared and talented enough to go ahead and do that. Tell us about, obviously, your club chairman. You want to obviously get results on the pitch. You're a competitive club in the NPL, but the values of the club and what it does for the community, can you give us a little bit of an inkling about what you guys stand for in that respect?
We're definitely a multicultural club. I guess you could call us a family club. We definitely take, and I've got to be careful how I word this, we definitely take a lot of kids that know the club wants.
Mm.
So in saying that, we're not a hardcore club when it comes to trials. That if you can't kick, we let you go. We take those kids. So as a value, we believe that those kids are better off the street. So we take them in. And then there's something in those kids that they become Croydon kids.
Mm.
And they fall in love with the club.
That's fantastic there, Angelo.
Yeah.
So what are the challenges? Obviously, you know, people just see, you know, the games being played on the weekend, the brilliant strips you come up with, the wins, the success.
Yeah.
But the challenges of running a club like Croydon Kings, tell us about that.
Like every club, we compete with, especially in their area, there's six strong clubs around us that we compete with. So we have to try and get $1,000 from their parents as a junior and try and... And what all a club can offer is a coach, two nights a week, and a Sunday game.
Mm.
So the challenge there is, what does a customer get for the $1,000? And as a 10-year-old kid, they don't understand that, but their parent understands it. So that our challenge, not just us, every club is we don't pay our coaches, but it's something we're working to get, for instance, Johnny Cosmina to coach at our club.
Mm.
Well, it costs money. Therefore, we have to put our fees up. The higher the fees go, the harder it is to attract or keep that player.
Yeah, I think that's an issue across Australia.
Yeah.
We want to do to tell you the truth, Angelo, we want to do a think tank here on FNR where we get people like yourself on radio in a group of people who experience this all the time to see how we can... It's a real issue in Australian football that everyone does complain about, so we need to have a look at that. We'd love you to be involved in that sort of think tank from your experiences. One last one before I let you go. Your vision for the club in 10 years' time?
Well, at the moment now, we have two grounds. We have a senior ground and we have a junior ground. Our vision, well, hopefully, we're a long way down this track of moving our existing home ground to our junior ground, where we have 3 to 4 pitches in one location, which will enable us to have the seniors and juniors in one location. That's our vision. That will be our... Well, not my legacy, but the current board's legacy, that once that's done, we can say our job's done.
And you may even have a second division to strive for too there, Angelo.
But, yes, that's true.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us today. Love finding out about what clubs are doing all around Australia. And Croydon Kings, obviously very, very successful club at the elite level of EPL, but also reaching into the community and helping all those other kids who don't get an opportunity. Congratulations on your work, mates. And we'll keep in touch with you and see how everything progresses.
Thanks. Thank you.
Good on you, mate. That's Angelo Colangelo, the club chairman of Croydon Kings in Adelaide. That brings Calcio Cafe to an end for today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a great day in football.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR. Football Nation Radio.